one weird objection. When Hannibal doses Abigail, he makes mushroom tea. And in my experience, that's the way to just waste a good bag of mushrooms. Maybe Hannibal's got the good stuff and knows how to brew it just right, but like, you know.
I would have to say.
Put it in the omelet.
I think Hannibal knows what he's doing with mushrooms.
Okay, so we're ready to talk about the fourth episode of season one, Oof.
Egg.
Yes, and we will see some eggs.
There will be eggs.
Delicious looking eggs. I don't know about the sausage. So this episode opens with a conversation between Will and Hannibal, where Hannibal is again kind of trying to push Will into the darker parts of his identity. Will is talking about how he feels like Garrett Jacob Hobbs, that he has had feelings that they're doing the same thing at the same time. And Hannibal says, do you feel like you're becoming him? Which is, of course, what Hannibal wants. But Will is not there yet. He resists and he says, I know who I am. It's not Garrett Jacob Hobbs. So we go on to our first murder, the murder of the week. And this murder is about families, and the episode is about families, and specifically about the families that either you create for yourself or choose for yourself, or families that somebody chooses for you. I think this is Will's recreation of this murder, where we get him going the swipe, and then him going back in time is a pretty great one.
Yeah, it's good.
The maggots crawling in the food and the blood on the table disappearing and the body sitting up. So it's a good one. And Will understands immediately that there's the mother has forgiven the killer. And so he has a sense that the killer is the abducted child from that family.
Mm-hmm.
We see Hannibal going into Will's home and feeding sausages to Will's dog. Now, we've seen Will feed the dogs. We've seen Hannibal feed Will. And now Hannibal's feeding Will's dogs to get Will's family. And he'll later refer to the dogs as his family to accept him and to like him. And then Hannibal just sort of goes on this like kind of creeper journey through Will's house,
yeah,
including looking in his underwear drawer. And then Hannibal completes Will's fly, the fly that Will's in the process of creating, the fishing lure. And I think it's interesting that Hannibal first looks through the magnifying glass and then moves the magnifying glass away and completes the lure without the magnifying glass. He doesn't need it to see what Will is creating.
Yeah, and I had just a couple of reactions to that initially. Well, first with the underwear drawer, that it's like the most blank slate you could be, right? It's like brand new looking underwear all folded neatly. There's like almost nothing to see there. And we were talking a couple of episodes back, or maybe the first episode, about Will being like Sherlock Holmes. And that image of Hannibal's eye in the magnifying glass is just such a Sherlock Holmes moment. And then when he starts completing the fly, I just had this thought, like, of course Hannibal knows how to tie a fly, right? Like, he just knows how to do everything.
Yes, he is hyper competent.
Yeah, hyper competent.
Also, Hannibal pricks himself with the hook, and it draws blood,
mm-hmm,
and Hannibal licks the blood.
Yep.
And I think this is a very, obviously it's very sexualized. There's a kind of an image of virginity, losing one's virginity here.
And just that he wants Will to hurt him. He wants Will, yes, to inflict damage and, yes, possibly inflict damage on him.
Yes, I kind of was wondering about this, and I guess we can talk more about this later, but it is interesting. I wonder in bringing, I mean, Hannibal later, you'll see, at times is very much willing to sacrifice himself for Will. Other times it doesn't seem like he's willing to do that. But this certainly gave me the sense that if he can bring out the killer in Will, it would be worth it for Will to kill him.
Yep.
So I think you have a sense of that very, very early on, and it's obviously a lot of foreshadowing of what will happen.
Yep, yep.
And also with regard to the fly, there's the issue that the idea that, I mean, a fly is a lure, right? You're luring fish that you're going to catch. And Hannibal's making a lure for Will, or completing Will's lure. And later you'll see Will having had second thoughts, having had an impulse to buy Abigail a gift that would have to do with fishing, and then thinking better of it.
Mm, that's a good point. And Hannibal doesn't – Hannibal's really curious about that. And I wonder if – is he jealous that Will wanted to give the lure to Abigail? It almost – he seems so intrigued by the fact that he was doing that. And now I wonder – now as you're saying this, I wonder if Hannibal's – sort of secretly relieved that Will didn't give the lore to Abigail, because Hannibal seems to have this relationship with the lore, you know?
Yes, I think there did seem to me to be an element of Hannibal a kind of being jealous that Will came to his home with a gift for somebody else,
mm-hmm.
that he's been thinking about somebody else, even though he wants him to start thinking about Abigail. You know, there is a sort of like a jealous lover moment when he sees that gift.
Right.
So we have a scene of Alana visiting Abigail. I thought sort of the most interesting thing about that scene was Abigail talking about how she doesn't want to go to support groups. And we know actually part of the reason is because, much of the reason is because she can't be honest in the support group. And Alana says to her, you have to find someone to relate to mm-hmm. in this. And of course, she really already has somebody to relate to in this.
And as is often the case with Alana, she's right, but not in the way that she thinks. Or her rightness isn't going to lead into the direction that she would like it to lead to.
Yes. Yes. Alana is right for the wrong reasons.
Right.
Or Alana is right if this were the real world.
Exactly. Exactly. There's a lot of stuff here of, and we could talk about this a little at the end, of Alana. Alana just doesn't know. It would never occur to her, and it would never occur to anyone, but it certainly just doesn't occur to her how off the rails things already are with Hannibal and Will and Abigail. And definitely not what – nobody knows what Hannibal's capable of, really, except Abigail a bit. But it just doesn't factor into people's thinking right now.
Yeah. I mean, we know more now. Even if we didn't know who Hannibal was at the beginning of this series, we certainly know more now than a lot of the other characters know.
Yeah.
We've been included in that information. We've sort of been included in the family, if you want to use the theme of this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Which, by the way, the theme of this episode is very, it's not subtle.
I mean, no, it's overtly stated.
Over and over and over again. I mean, the woman who's making the children kill their families actually says it. She talks about choosing families or creating families or not being part of the families you were randomly born into. Will and Hannibal have a conversation about family, where Will sort of tells Hannibal, you're going for the easy questions if you're asking about my mother.
Mm-hmm.
But Will does say he's never really understood the concept of family.
And there's a lot, there are different characters overtly state this idea of finding your own family, and that the family you want is not necessarily the family that you're born into, and you get to choose who your family is. Or, yes, your family gets to choose you, but it's not necessarily the family you're born into. And different characters just overtly state that over and over again.
Yes, constantly. I mean, Hannibal takes Abigail out of the hospital explicitly against Alana's wishes, and he tells her, you're not your father's daughter anymore. Hannibal and Will have a conversation about feeling like surrogate parents to Abigail.
Right. I like that conversation that Hannibal has with her and that he says that to her, though. There's a bunch of moments earlier in Abigail's history on the show where she has a lot of concern about whether she's like her father or not. You know, Hannibal had previously said, I'm nothing like your father, when Abigail was realizing that he's probably a serial killer. And I think by Hannibal telling her this, he's obviously not telling her, no, you're not a killer, because he wants her to be a killer and he does think she's a killer. He's just saying, you're not a sloppy, emotional killer who's going to get caught, right? What he's really saying to her is, you could be as good as me, and you're not like your father because you're better. You're a more evolved killer. You're smarter. You're sharper. You're a better liar. All those things.
Yes. Agreed.
Yep.
Hannibal gets Abigail high on mushrooms. She drops the teacup and lets it shatter. So we've already had the many conversations about Will as a fragile teacup. And here's Hannibal putting Abigail into a position, or guiding Abigail into a position, or creating a situation in which that teacup gets broken. There's two things that Will says there's two conversations that are interesting. One is Will, in trying to find out who the killer is, talks about captor bonding, where he uses an interesting turn of phrase where he says, you bond with your captor, you survive, or your breakfast.
Yes.
So I think that's, you know, just a little amusing joke.
Right.
A truth, but funny.
Yep. And also not subtle. Like, this episode's not trying to be subtle.
No. I mean, there's also a conversation about your family member adopts your behaviors, you know.
Yep.
Alana confronts Hannibal about having taken Abigail out of the hospital. And the two things she says is that it was, you're somebody who puts a value on courtesy, and this couldn't have been more discourteous. And she actually calls him rude, which I think prompts him to invite her to have breakfast for dinner with Abigail in a place that was meant for Will.
Mm.
He says, we were waiting for Will. And then Abigail, while she's tripping, sees them as her parents, and they ask what she sees, and she says, I see family.
Mm-hmm.
So again, a very sort of blunt end to the episode.
But it was very effective, though. I kind of got a chill when she said it. It was just, it was such a good, dense episode that moment just gave me, I really felt that. I just thought it was just a great piece of writing.
My question about this is, does Hannibal, I mean, it's sort of, I guess he could have anticipated that Alana was going to show up, but he does say, does he say we were waiting for Will?
You know, I don't remember that. I'll have to see. Yeah.
Yeah. But he's been talking from the last episode about he and Will being Abigail's surrogate parents.
Yep.
So I'm just wondering if this is fortuitous that he ends up placing Alana in a situation where Abigail's going to kind of imprint on Alana as a mother figure and Hannibal as a father figure. Is that something Hannibal wants to happen? Is that something that can coexist with this idea of Hannibal and Will being her surrogate parents? Is it something he's seeing as, you know, opportunistically useful? I'm just not really sure about that.
It could be a different, it can be a combination. I think Hannibal, he is, you know, you were saying this during an earlier conversation, that he is extremely controlled, extremely disciplined, but he is not inflexible. Whatever happened in that situation, he could have easily kept Alana out of the room if he wanted to. So he must have made a calculation and said, even if he didn't expect her, he made a calculation and realized that it would be appropriate for her to be there, right? And so even if he was expecting Will, he obviously thought, okay, here's another path this can take, and it's still going to work for my purposes.
Yeah, he's always calculating and calibrating and adapting and assessing how to use circumstances to the best end for him and for what he wants.
Yeah.
And maybe that's what this is.
I think that's an example of this. Now, there were a couple of things that happened in the episode that there's still a little more. I don't know if you want to, we're going to talk about that or not.
Oh, about Jack and his wife?
Yeah.
Yeah, Jack has the encounter with the little boy who was going to kill his mother. The little boy sort of says, you can't understand because you don't have children. And Jack, later in bed with his wife, says, is it too late for us to have kids? And she turns her back on him and says, it's too late for me.
And,
you know, I don't have a strong memory of this. Is she keeping secret from him at this point that she has cancer?
I don't think she's told him yet. She's highly, highly stressed, obviously, and she has this really troubled expression on her face. I think you think that this is a different kind of issue for her than it is. Earlier, there was a scene where Jack had one of his one-on-one dinners with Hannibal, and Hannibal was like, basically, why aren't you bringing your wife to dinner? And Jack made like a joke, like, oh, we don't want you diagnosing all our marital problems right away. But Jack really is nervous about exposing. I think he doesn't know what's going on with his wife right now. Like, obviously, she's got something on her mind. He probably doesn't know exactly what's happening. And maybe he just feels like they couldn't have a nice time at Hannibal's house. You know, you just don't know exactly. Or maybe he really is protective of his privacy and just doesn't want someone. Maybe he senses, again, not the full extent of Hannibal's manipulativeness and exactly how far Hannibal can go. But he may sense that he doesn't want someone with such keen obs. That joke may have like some truth in it, that he doesn't want to be so keenly observed by somebody, especially while his wife seems to be really troubled in a way that he can't figure out.
Yes. And there also may be an element, I mean, certainly I think his having said that in that sort of joking, casual way reveals that this is something that's in his thoughts. But I think Jack also really enjoys his one-on-one relationship.
I think so too.
It's something he gets pleasure out of. It's stimulating to him. He likes the food. This is also a time when you just see the flash of Hannibal killing the person who they are now eating.
Yeah.
It's a funny little cut.
I also thought there was just something in Jack's tone when he says that to his wife. Like, it's not an offhand thing to say to somebody, but it reminded me a little bit of like Jack's getting pulled into this whole conversation about family, and he's been thinking about family, and he's getting excited about, it seems like he's getting excited about these new relationships he has with Hannibal and Will. I guess he had a relationship with Alana already, but there does seem to be a little family, a little professional family forming around Jack as well, right? He's spending a lot of time with these people. He's learning to trust them. He's having dinner with them. This may be kind of a new phase of Jack's career, and he may be, or just a new phase of his professional life, and he's excited about it. And there was something about him coming home and saying this thing to his wife that sort of reminded me of when you're with someone for a long time and then you just start getting excited about something and you bring it home and you're just like, hey, this thing. And you know, your partner, your spouse is glad you're excited about something, but like isn't as excited about it as you are. You know what I mean? And I feel like that this was almost an example of that, of Jack bringing home this work that he's getting excited about, or bringing home a trace of these new people that he's getting excited about. And it's just not landing with his wife, you know?
Yeah, I guess the larger thing about that conversation is without knowing that she has this, she has a brain tumor, right? Is that what it is?
I think so.
I think she has a brain tumor. You know, it's the kind of conversation where the person who's asking the question is conveying a sense of incompleteness in the relationship, in the family, saying, you know, I want a different family.
Right.
There's obviously tension between them, but even if you didn't, if even not knowing that she has a secret right now and a serious one, you could see that being off-putting to have just sort of been randomly brought up during a time that's clearly tense between them.
And yeah, and I guess that's what I mean about sort of Jack's relationship with these, his relationship with this new team that's gathered around him sort of bleeding over into his marriage in a way that his wife just doesn't understand yet, because this is very much on his mind. It's almost like you, when you're exposed to something a lot and you don't realize that's, or you just kind of get overcome with excitement about it, or you just feel like it's something that everybody must understand. And I think by bringing it up to her, it is kind of out of the blue, and it is like a lot to just spring on her like that. But I think, again, there's like Jack has gathered some kind of emotional momentum about this topic because of his exposure to all these people and his sort of just he's being enlivened by his relationship with them. And it's sort of it almost just like he almost it's not like he blurts it, but I almost feel like he blurts it in an almost in an excited way, not really thinking through how she might react to it, because he's been around people who have just been talking about this for the longest time. Right. And it's people he's spending a ton of time with talking about this topic. And so it probably seems okay for him to just kind of bring it up out of the blue when it's just really not.
Just speaking about this idea of the team, we also do see the forensic team. And they feel a little more integrated to me in that they're in this conversation about family and they're revealing stuff about their own families and making kind of judgments or assessments of each other based on where they fall within their families. And also we have Beverly basically saving Will's life. She shoots the killer. And it even though it's odd that they're there, and we've talked about this, like why is a forensic team there? It is kind of earned because we've seen her instructing Will at the firing range. So I just thought that was interesting. She obviously has a very significant interest in Will, not a romantic interest, but an interest in Will as a human, almost as a scientist would.
Right.
Not in the same way Hannibal does, but she has an interest in who he is and what makes him tick and in how his mind works. And she's protective of him. She's developing a protectiveness towards him. So we see really the early stages of that in that scene.
Yep. That was a big overall comment I just had about this, about watching this episode the first time through, is I felt like, in contrast to the second episode with the mushroom killer, I felt like the formula that second episode was looking for worked a lot better in this episode. And I don't know if it's just because now it's the fourth episode and they're kind of getting their sea legs a little bit more in the series, but the integration of the investigation into the crime of the week and the behavior of the forensic team and the pace of the investigation and the glimpses we see of that group of killers, the suspense we feel building up to it until eventually the FBI team kind of figures out where they're going next and is able to stop a killing. So that's all happening. And I thought that was really well paced. And I thought we got enough of that to feel like it was really an investigation that started off very difficult to figure out and slowly gathered momentum. And different members of the team brought different skills into figuring out until eventually they were able to prevent the next murder. I thought the pacing of that and the momentum of it really worked. Unlike in episode two with the mushroom murder, when there was just seemed to be a lot of talk about it, and then it just sort of concluded really quickly. And that formula of interspersing the interpersonal relationship development with the investigative momentum just seemed to really work very well in this episode. And I think that's the forensic team was better integrated. I think the kind of unsubtle discussion about the theme of the episode, all the stuff about family, adopting family, turning kids into killers, you know, Hannibal's manipulativeness, his desire to bring Will into the family, this whole idea of surrogate families and making families, and making families with, like, you know, homicidal, with like a homicidal purpose, creating families whose business is, or whose type of family bonding is killing. All that conversation, I felt like the lack of subtlety about that conversation worked, because maybe it's because we're starting to accept the characters more and we're accepting this type of dialogue and we're accepting the intensity of it. But that felt like that storyline of the developing interpersonal relationships seemed to really hold its own against the momentum of the investigation in this episode. And I felt like there was a really good balance. And it's one of those episodes where you can't believe that it's just the length of a normal TV episode. So much seemed to happen. There seemed to be so much emotional development, so much investigative development. And it all tied together really well. So I just feel like the formula's working in this episode, whereas like in episode two, it felt a little bit more forced and a little less balanced.
Yeah, I absolutely understand what you're saying about this. And I did think the pacing of this was very, very good. But it's true, we're also just delving deeper into these characters. They can sort of spend less time explaining things, and rather than having them just evolve through these therapy sessions or conversations or dinners. By the way, I guess we probably should talk about this next time, but we're really getting into the beauty of the food styling here.
Yeah, that breakfast for dinner, there's like a carved papaya on the table that just looks like, I mean, it looks like a carnivorous plant. It's just really, really beautiful and just really, yeah. I feel like it's the first time now that we've really seen something, like a centerpiece and sort of a dinner table that looks that over exaggerated and crazy.
Well, also it's fascinating that when he's having dinner with Jack, the centerpiece appears to be antlers and feathers. Mm. So you should take a look at that on the rewatch. Mm, okay. I mean, it really, really jumped out at me. We should probably, and there's one thing I do want to say. We've talked about how we're not reading about the show. There's one thing I must look up, because I have a memory of reading about the scene where Hannibal throws the potato up in the air and it lands on the knife, on his knife, which is just fantastic.
It's amazing.
I remember reading some interview where somebody, maybe it was Brian Fuller, says he did that on the first take.
Oh, wow.
So I have to look it up and find out if that's true, and I'll report back to you, but I won't go further than that.
Well, if it's true, I just want to watch the reaction, because if you get that on the first take, like, how do you then continue acting right after that? You know, one other thing also, let's think about this. When you first see Hannibal in Will's house, he's feeding the dogs, he's snooping around, and there's a cut to Will while all this is going on, where Will is like working with the investigative team, and, you know, Will's in the thick of doing the investigation and Hannibal's walking around at his house, and it's almost paced and shot and set up as if Hannibal's sneaking around in his house, right? Like, it almost feels like Hannibal's broke in. Will doesn't know because Will's off doing this investigation. And the way it's edited sort of fools you into thinking that. It's a big surprise later when you realize that Will had asked Hannibal to feed the dogs.
So intimate.
Yeah, it's
so intimate. I was very surprised too.
Yeah. But when Hannibal and Will have their session early in the episode, did you see Hannibal's wearing a white shirt and a white tie?
No. I didn't know.
He's wearing white on white. And you mentioned Will's underwear drawer, which is also all white on white. And I just wonder if there's some connection there. But we'll see.
I'm going to go look. And it is, I had the same reaction. And I really didn't remember that this wasn't Hannibal just sneaking around. Although I did say, why is the door open?
Yeah.
But then I just said, well, you know, no rules.
Yeah.
I thought Hannibal was sneaking into his house. And I was newly surprised when Will said, you know, thanks for taking care of my family, basically.
Yes. And by the way, feeding human meat to my family. Like Hannibal is just feeding everyone around him and everyone who's important to everybody else human meat. And they're just all cannibals now. It actually reminded me of something from the last episode. You know, when they arrive at the Hobbs house, someone's written cannibals on the side of their house. And it's obviously supposed to be like, you know, insulting and to scare them off and all that. But it almost feels like a greeting, right? Like, welcome, cannibals, or hello, cannibals. Because they're all cannibals and they don't know it yet.
Yes. One thing that when you bring this up, that scene of Hannibal and Will's house is cross-cutting with Will doing an investigation is, I mean, this is probably obvious, but Hannibal was doing his own investigation.
Right.
I mean, they're both investigating.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you want us to think about for the next conversation or?
One stray observation, I like when Abigail first visits Hannibal and says, do you have a beer? Because Hannibal's just not.
You mean Alana.
Sorry. Alana says, do you have a beer? Hannibal's just like not a beer drinking kind of person. To show up in his house and say, let's have a beer is really funny. But of course he brings a beer in the right glass to her and it looks perfect. Right. So
yes,
he's just one of those people. He's got great beer in case a beer needs to be drunk and he has it in and he can bring it in the right glass. Like no one's drinking out of a bottle in his household. And then he's just drinking wine. I did, you know, we can talk about this a little bit more next time too. Alana's really pissed when she gets to Hannibal's house at the end and Abigail's there and that Hannibal pulled her out of the hospital against her knowledge. This I thought was a really good, another good example of how Alana is right, but in the wrong world. Because, and then Hannibal lies to her and says, well, I gave her half a Valium and she's going to be kind of spacey. I mean, she's just been tripping crazily, right? And it would never occur to Alana that Hannibal would go so far as to give her psychedelic drug therapy, much less use that psychedelic therapy to bond Abigail to him like he's a parent, much less with the goal of turning her into a murderous cannibal, member of a murderous cannibal family.
Exactly. Alana's in the real world where she's shocked that Hannibal's given her a sedative.
Right. Without talking to her. Like it's it's like regular workplace, my colleague overstepped. And meanwhile, Hannibal is like using psychedelic drugs to convert this young woman into a murdering cannibal. Yeah. It's just Alana's she has no idea and no one around them has any idea how like the severity of what's really happening. So yes. I thought that was one of those good examples of Alana just, you know, being perfectly sensible, but but not knowing.
Wrong place, wrong time.
Wrong place, wrong time. Exactly. So,
All right. So we'll rewatch and we'll come back and we'll discuss some more.
All right. Hi, everyone. This is Matt. I'm jumping in here before we talk about our second viewing because Beth and I are about to discuss something pretty difficult. We actually took several months off between the first part of this recording and the second because there were COVID-related deaths in our family. And if you listen, you'll see why we discussed it here and left it in. But I understand that this may be hard for some of you to listen to. And if that's the case, just skip ahead about 6 minutes and you'll be clear of the difficult stuff. Okay, thanks. I hope you enjoy the rest of the discussion. Well, we're back. It's been quite some time since we did part one of episode 4, Oof.
Yes, it's been several months, and I think the reason that we had to take a long break can also be described with the term oof.
Oof.
Should we discuss the reason we had to take a bit of a hiatus?
I think we do. I think our heads are going to be in a different place as we start this episode. So as we start this second half of this episode, so we should explain it.
Okay, so I guess we should say the reason we started doing this is right at the beginning of the pandemic. We decided we wanted to just do something together that would be enjoyable and that would be a distraction and that would engage our minds a little bit, and just so we could have a little bit of fun while we were stuck in the house. And it was fun, and then things took a bit of a turn and it became the only thing I was looking forward to. And then after the first half of this segment, we had to take the break. Which do you want to
Sure. What happened was our mother got COVID and died over a long period. It took a while for it to play out. So there was some time when this was at the height of the COVID outbreak in New York, when we were managing her care remotely because we couldn't go to the hospital and we couldn't see her. And it was highly, highly stressful. And it became so distracting that we were sort of unable to concentrate on anything else. Eventually, she wound up, after a lot of time, several weeks of her bouncing around, she finally wound up in hospice care. But that didn't resolve very quickly either. She was in hospice care, basically in a medically induced coma for 2 whole weeks, where every single day the doctors were telling us she only has hours left to live, and that went on for 2 weeks. And it was extremely, extremely difficult, extremely distracting. And to be affected by the pandemic in that way, to lose a family member, to lose our mother, while at the same time our federal government was failing harder and harder and harder to even acknowledge that this was a real problem, made for both of us a very difficult emotional state to be in. And it was very hard to concentrate even on enjoyable things like Hannibal.
But now we're bouncing back a little.
Yes. We should mention, too, that it took us a little while to bounce back because shortly after that, yes, our stepfather, our mother's partner of 30 years, also died, got COVID and died. And that was just the kicker. So that was also, not to make light of it, but that was also highly distracting and very, very absorbing. And I'd say we only are now both sort of, I'll speak for myself, I'm only really feeling now, like since May, I really only feel like I'm sort of coming out of it now. Like I really only feel like I'm starting to feel like myself again. And it's October.
Yeah, I would say the same thing. I would say I've been in a state of very, very difficult anxiety for many, many, many months, and sleeplessness and distraction and all of that. And yeah, now I'm feeling a little bit back to normal, closer to normal. And I really wanted to start with this again because I wanted to get back to a place of doing something with you that we both enjoy.
And in a way, it is kind of interesting to come back to this episode having lost 2 members of our family, you know, because this episode is about family. It's about making families and it's about finding families. I just can't help but think that that was either preventing us from coming back to this episode, or why we finally said we have to come back to this episode, because our family has been so altered by the events of the last few months. And here we have an episode about people finding family in extremely trying circumstances.
Yeah, which is frankly, you know, the grim reality of what we went through felt very lurid. And just because of the circumstances of COVID and the pandemic, it really felt very heightened and extreme from any other experience I've had with people going through medical issues or loss. It's very strange. So yeah, it's very strange to be coming back and doing this episode, but I guess kind of fitting.
Yes. And when I rewatched it, so usually we've been watching an episode, doing an immediate recording, and then a day or two later rewatching it and talking about it. That's the way we did the first three. So now there's been this very long break between us watching it. But I found that when I watched it again, I just was freshly impressed, really, with what a good piece of television it is, with just what a great episode of television it is. And also how it was a good episode to come back to Hannibal with. It is the episode where the show explicitly establishes itself as something other than a police procedural.
Yeah, I think there's a very explicit laying out of themes in this episode, and also signaling the direction the show is going to go in. And you know, I imagine people's response to this episode can, some people I'm sure love the episode, and I'm sure some people say, well, this is kind of outside of what Hannibal usually does, which is a lot more subtle with how it presents its themes. But first of all, to come back to it after a hiatus, it was, I think, helpful that this was an episode where things are explicitly stated. And I also do think, we spoke a little bit about this, about how when you, on our, both of our first watches of Hannibal, we had the dissonance of what is this show, because it felt like a police procedural, and then so you're looking for things that to be reality-based, and how you make the switch to not a non-reality-based universe, but a universe that's based in a different reality, that has different rules and different structures and different possibilities in it, in terms of time and space and things like that. I think in a lot of ways, this is the episode that kind of instructed the viewers as to what the show was going to be and how it was going to be a very different show. And it sort of set it outright.
Which is that the show is about creating families, creating the family you want, as opposed to living with the family that you've been born into.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting on the rewatch that I just thought about the three last scenes of the episode are Abigail still tripping at Hannibal's breakfast for dinner table, looking at Hannibal and Alana and saying that she sees family. Then an episode of Will with his dog family. A scene of Will with his dog family. And then a scene of Jack Crawford with his dysfunctional and possibly incomplete family. And those are the last three scenes focusing on those three different families. And they're all going to intersect and come together in some complex ways.
It made me think about why I like it so much, and the kind of a meta conversation that I think is going on in this episode. It's not just about these characters finding surrogate families when they, for whatever reason, don't belong or no longer have access to the families they were born with. I feel like there's like a meta description there going on of like fandom itself.
Yeah, you could really look, for example, at Will as somebody who's, you know, doing a very close reading of the text that's being created by the killers.
as which many fans are, right? They're just close readers and interpreters of text and looking for layers and looking for meaning and looking for authorial intent. You know, that's what Will's doing. And then there's sort of people with less insight, but still some insight who he interacts with, like Jack and the forensic team. You could look at Freddie Lowndes as a troll, right? Yeah. She's like a troll in the community. So I think it's a very apt comparison. And the reason I'm just laughing is because you and I have a joke about the line from Psycho of you were very apt. I'm not Psycho.
Vertigo.
Of you're a very apt pupil. And whenever I use that word, it you just think, makes me laugh.
Very apt pupil. You were a very apt pupil.
Right.
Anyway, sorry to digress.
Yes.
But yeah, I think as we go on watching, we can sort of keep this idea in mind and sort of look at the roles that different people play and think of them as how they would play out in a real fan community. And I guess there's also something interesting about this just because of what to me seems to be a very special relationship between the Hannibal fandom and the Hannibal creators, that Brian Fuller was really, really receptive to fans. I think they adopted terminology that was coined by fans. I think there was sort of a real sense of moving the relationship between Will and Hannibal in a direction that the fans were very in favor of and had been discussing and advocating for and hoping for. So it's very interesting just to think about. It's meta on a lot of different levels.
Yeah. And we may have mentioned this in a previous episode. I'm not sure if we did. You and I both went to that in the before time, that Matt Zollersite's New York TV Festival screening of the Hannibal finale. And we all got together and watched the Hannibal finale. And, you know, I'm not, despite my extreme devotion to horror, I've never been much of like a, I like film festivals. I like to find myself at events, but I don't really. I've just never been someone who went to horror cons or really went way out of my way for film festivals. I don't know why. They're totally enjoyable, but it's just not a thing that I've incorporated into my habits.
Can I just interrupt for one second?
Yeah.
And I just want to say also that, you know, I've been involved in some fandoms online, but I also am not a person who's ever gone to cons or anything of that nature. I think I kind of felt that going to cons was going to be a slippery slope for me because I'm a very, very obsessive person about the entertainment I'm consuming. And I really did feel it might be a slippery slope for me. Also, I started really getting involved in online fandom a little bit later in life. And I also felt, you know, a little old, you know, that although I don't think that's actually true in any way. But yeah, so I was in the same position as you. I enjoy fandom, I engage in fandom, I interact in fandom, but I don't go to events generally and I don't go to cons. So this was an unusual little foray for us.
Yeah. And it was sort of eye-opening to go to this screening. Because it was like slipping into a warm bath. It was just like, oh, these are all Hannibal fans. We are all unabashed Hannibal fans. There were people there dressed in Hannibal clothing. There were, you know, just super fans. But one of the and it was really nice to feel like it was, we were just, you know, in an environment that was a completely, completely safe space to be obsessive about this piece of pop culture that we love, you know?
Yes, and everyone there was lovely.
Lovely, like, yeah.
Open and warm and just kind of elated to be there and to just enjoy this communal experience of watching this fantastic finale.
Yes.
And it was, yeah, it was wonderful.
And but what the reason why I brought this up in the first place was it also
is part of the conversation that I feel of the meta conversation of the Hannibal family as a fandom. Because Brian Fuller was interviewed, so he Skyped in, and you know, I guess it was at, what was it, at the IFC? Was it at the IFC? Mm-hmm. And he Skyped in and did a Q&A with his face gigantic on the big screen. And that was the thing. He just seemed so sincerely, sincerely tickled by the turnout and by how excited everybody was and all the questions he was getting. And just, there was just a giant smile plastered on his face the whole time. And it was, and in the background in his house, wherever he was broadcasting from, there was like a Starship Enterprise in the background, and there was just like all this memorabilia. And it just made me think that this must be, for someone like him, he's a fan too. I just felt like that moment for him must have been like so satisfying to see the very kind of fandom that he likes to participate in developing around this thing that he's created. And there was almost like a line blurred between him and the fans. It almost felt like he was as big a fan. He was as happy to be part of the fandom as he was to be the creator of this thing, you know?
I think that seems to be true, and it's sort of been consistent over time. Fuller and the other showrunners really have interacted with the fans in a very, very open way. I mean, he was wearing a T-shirt with fan art on it, a fan art of Will and Hannibal kissing, and he was wearing a flower crown, as many people in the audience were, and... yeah, it was much more of a shared community, not just of fans enjoying something they love, but a shared community between the creators and the fans. And it felt very special. I think I was saying, I imagine some people would critique this episode as being less subtle than other episodes. But in another way, it is just very satisfying because it does feel like, you're sort of breathing out. I see what this is. You're telling me what it is. I can come into this and accept it and sort of let myself embrace it and be embraced by it. And there's a lot of that feeling around this episode. So you leave this episode, at least I did, feeling very satisfied with it.
Yeah. And because I think the episode just feels permitted to overtly state those themes and, you know, really explain that what this show is about is these people who are attracted to each other gathering around this thing that they're all fascinated with, because this episode just says it. It's almost like that, being able to just get that all out lets the other stuff flow more easily, you know, almost like therapy, like when you finally are able to like just say what the hell's bothering you, it relaxes you a little bit.
Yeah, it's a little bit like the therapy where you're telling a dream, and as you're saying the words, you're like, oh, it's so obvious what this dream was about. Oh, I had a dream about you moving to a different house far away from me. I guess I know what that dream's about. It was confusing me until I articulated it.
Right.
But there is a little bit of that here. Yeah, I agree. I did want to, just as a getting a little more specific about one thing I did want to say, when we had recorded the first part of this episode, I had made reference to a memory of reading something about Mads getting the potato on the knife, in one take. And I said I was going to research that and not go beyond it because I wanted to check. He did not get that in one take. It took, in fact, about 30 takes.
Oh.
However, there's a subsequent episode, and this is what I was thinking about, where he cracks an egg on the side. He throws an egg up in the air. It cracks on the side of a spatula and goes into a frying pan. That was what I was thinking of. He got it on the first take, and there's something on the internet from one of the food stylists on the show who says that it's such a hard thing to do
that they had several Japanese chefs standing by with their hands made up to look like Mads's hands. And they just knew it was going to be very, very difficult to get this shot. And he did it on in one take.
Oh, wow.
So we'll keep an eye out for that.
Okay.
He's also hyper competent, much like the character he plays.
Right, right. Because he seems really happy when it happens.
Oh, yeah.
And either way, if it had happened on the first take, you would have been like delighted and everyone would have been delighted. And if you had done 30 takes and finally gotten it, it would have been like, whew.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
We can go home now.
Yeah, he or does look.
We can have lunch.
He looks very pleased with himself.
There were some other things that I really liked that just on second viewing, I just really enjoyed. There's a line that just cracked me up. Like sometimes you miss the humor in the show because everyone's can be so grim.
Yeah.
There's a thing that just cracked me up when Will comes to see Hannibal in his office and he's got that gift that he was going to give to. Uh-huh. Yeah, he's got that gift that he was going to give and it's. It was a fly tying set, and Hannibal's like, "What are you talking about? Why would you do that?" And Will's like, "I was upset when I bought it. That's why I'm not going to." I just love that line. I was upset when I bought it. He's so annoyed. I was upset when I bought it. It's just very, very funny.
I agree. There was another line that really sort of amused me, not in a sort of cracking up way, but it was a line that slipped by me the first time, which is when the forensic team are talking about their own families, that Beverly says, "My baby sister got away with murder. She mm-hmm. had them all fooled."
Yeah. Oh,
so,
wow. Good.
It was just a terrific little line about murder and fooling people. You know, that just functioned in both ways and was just, I thought, terrific.
Yep. Yep. There was also one other thing that I noticed when there's a picture of the mother and the son, and it looks like the mother's like eating the son. She's kind of like not biting his head, but she's kissing his head and leaning over him. And there's also like a baby, like a toy octopus on his chest. And it just looks like the kid's being consumed. I just thought that was a nice.
Right.
Yeah, it was. Oh, did you notice that too?
I didn't. I'm going to go back and look at it.
Yeah.
I really like it.
Yep, yep. There was a couple of other things that I just wanted to note that I hadn't seen, really observed on the first viewing. There's a moment when, you know, when Will is teaching his class and Jack comes in and is like, "Get the fuck out," or whatever he says, which is great. And Will has that funny line where he's like, "You're making it really hard for me to give these kids an education." But Will, in that scene, I thought it was kind of interesting because Will is, the wardrobe choice I found interesting. Will's wearing like a suit that, like a jacket. He's not wearing a suit, but he's wearing a jacket and tie that seem kind of too big for him. He looks awkward in it. It's like a boxy jacket and it's like a tie that's too wide. And it almost looked to me like a kid trying on like dad's clothes. And I felt like that was a deliberate choice, that it just looks like Will is like, he's trying this on for size. He's
trying Hannibal on.
He's trying Hannibal on for size. He's starting to put on these. He does wear jackets and ties, but it just felt a little bit like if you just look at him standing in front of the classroom in that, it looks almost like a kid swimming around in a parent's clothes, and it's mismatched. It's wrong. Like, so I really like that. One weird objection. When Hannibal doses Abigail, he makes mushroom tea. And in my experience, that's the way to just waste a good bag of mushrooms. Maybe Hannibal's got the good stuff and knows how to brew it just right. But like, you know,
I would have to say,
put it in the omelet.
I think Hannibal knows what he's doing with mushrooms. Well, I assume he made some kind of tincture out of the mushrooms and infused the tea with it. I don't think it's like something maybe you or I would have tried to do, would just pour boiling water over mushrooms like they were porcinis. I believe he knows how to use those mushrooms to make a potent tea.
Okay, I'd buy it. And he certainly does. He's so good when she's, you know, when she's like, I don't feel so good. And he's like, you will feel good. You know, just let yourself, you know, he just sort of says, let me be your guide. Right. And she's immediately happy. And I think it's shortly after she picks up this persimmon, which just looks like a human heart. Right.
Right.
And
that
scene plays out just so well.
Hannibal would be a very good person to have with you when you were tripping, because he's very calming, if it weren't for the fact that he's leading you deeper into becoming a murderer. Other than that, he'd be a very good guy.
I know, he's taking such good care of her.
Yeah, yeah.
But he has been really, this episode's also full of how, you know, full of moments where he's just so artfully seducing her and bringing her in. I love the line when, you know, she's telling him about her dreams and, you know, that she doesn't feel guilty for being complicit in murder or being somewhat responsible. And she says, does that make me a sociopath? And he says, like, no, it makes you a survivor. It's just such a good way to turn that around. And he just always knows just what to say.
Yes, and of course, also the choice of, you know, breakfast for dinner, the same meal that the last meal she had with her family and the first meal she has with her new family is breakfast for dinner, and very likely both times sausages made from humans.
Yep, yep.
There was one thing I wanted to also point out, that we were talking about how Alana is very often right, but either for the wrong reasons or within a much narrower context than she is imagining.
Mm-hmm.
And she here, in talking about the families who are getting killed or how these kids are getting led into killing their families, says, without the interference of a leader, they wouldn't consider violent action. And, you know, you just have a whole series of people who that applies to, right? Like,
right.
Without her father as a leader, Abigail wouldn't be a killer. Without Hannibal as a leader, she wouldn't become more of a killer. Without Hannibal, Will wouldn't be led in that direction. And of course, the specific thing that Alana's actually talking about, without that, the kidnapping lady, those kids wouldn't be killers. So
right.
She's talking about a specific, and it applies to a lot of other relationships that are going on that she's unaware of.
It's just a really well-written episode.
Yep, I agree. I don't have anything more about this episode. Oh, there is actually one thing. When we were talking about the very beginning of the episode, where Will says, I know who I am, and it's not Garrett Jacob Hobbs. And I was just always reading that as, like, you know, Hannibal was trying to lead him there, and Will is just saying, I am not that killer. I'm not a murderer. I'm not a dark person. I don't want to do that. I think Will is saying that, but I think he's also saying, on some level, or Hannibal can take it on this level, some level that's not registering with Will, I'm not the kind of killer Garrett Jacob Hobbs is. And Hannibal's made a distinction between himself and Garrett Jacob Hobbs. He's made a distinction between Abigail and Garrett Jacob Hobbs. And I think Will is making a distinction, the broader distinction, I am not a killer, but the sort of deeper and more subtle distinction of, that would not be the kind of killer I would be.
Mm-hmm. You know what? There's one other thing I wanted to bring up. Like, speaking of fandom, one other thing that happened in the time between when we took this break and now have picked it up again is Hannibal landed on Netflix.
Yes.
Making it a much more accessible and probably popular show. I don't know how it did. But while we were not watching and recording this, Twitter blew up about Hannibal, And, you know, all my horror nerd Instagram started to mention it. And it was just like, and I had a funny feeling about it because it felt like this, you know, culty boutique TV show that we were, not culty, but like this small fandom that we were a part of suddenly was getting exposed to the world in a way that like I almost was reluctant to see. I'm really glad it landed on Netflix, and I'm really glad that the whole campaign about getting another season happened. But did you feel funny when it landed on Netflix while we were in the middle of this?
I kind of did. I felt like, well, I felt like we were sort of ahead of the curve on this sort of new this second wave of our own Hannibal experience. Mm-hmm. And that also just that because we hadn't put anything up on the internet. We hadn't put any of these episodes up. It was going to be like, oh, here's these two losers who just like saw Hannibal on Netflix and now they think they're talking about Hannibal. I mean, they might say that anyway, but it wasn't like Hannibal came on Netflix and we were just like, oh, let's talk about this show. You know, we were months before that. So it feels a little weird that it got a jump on us in that way. But I'm glad. I hope more people see it. I hope more people like it. It's just such a show deserving of as wide an audience as it can get. Although I am curious as to how wide an audience that would ever be, because it is an odd show. And maybe it was odder when it was actually on network television and you get a little more stuff off the beaten path, you know, that shows up on Netflix mm-hmm. and other streaming channels. But the show is very, very unique. I mean, it's kind of its visual beauty and artistry and its, you know, celebration of the grotesque is pretty unusual.
Yes, and it's often its gothic and melodramatic tone and the very specific and kind of mannered way that these characters talk and interact yes. with each other. It does seem like it's just not something that would be super broadly appealing.
Yes.
I haven't really read much about how popular it really got or, you know, if it was a big hit when it hit Netflix. I think some of the chatter has seemed to die down a little bit and Netflix has moved on to other things, but I hope it did find a new audience. And I hope, you know, there's always people who are going to stumble across something like this and be like, oh my God, this was made just for me, you know?
Yes.
So,
okay.
All right.
So I guess we should end and we will come back more regularly. We're going to get back to our regularly scheduled broadcasts and that'll be fun and enjoyable and interesting, I hope.